This is your World War III update. So, before I disseminate everything that's wrong with the world that's unfolded in the last 24 hours, as well as forecasting the dark future that awaits us all, I want to remind anybody who's new to the channel, this is not the standard format in which I deliver this information. Typically, there's an audiovisual component. I do have a professional studio. It helps augment the experience. It's not necessary, but some people are visual learners. I know I am, and I don't want people to think I'm just phoning these videos in, or the quality or the rigor of the research has been diminished as a result of the renovations that are currently taking place at our studio. In fact, the acoustics in a vehicle in a garage are actually pretty good. I know some people appreciate the minimalism of just being real and authentic and not having all the fancy lights and all that stuff. You just want the information. And I appreciate that, because we are entering the age of AI indistinguishability. And within a few months, I think this type of content is going to be preferred, because you're going to be able to at least know that it's real because of all the imperfections. So I just want you guys to know that I'm working just as hard as ever, in fact, more so than ever, in order to bring you accurate information, because the fog of war is so thick and we're living in the age of deceit, and it's only going to be supercharged by AI. So it's imperative you have accurate information in order to base your preparedness endeavors on. So today we need to talk about what's going to happen in the next 24 hours if Trump makes good on his very grandiose threats to black out the entire civilian power grid inside Iran, whether or not I think he's actually going to make good on those threats, and where the state of negotiations are currently at. Of course, we don't really know what the state of negotiations are. That's important to remember, that there's a lot of disinformation out there and misdirection. And because they're not entirely convinced that all of the Iranian leadership is aligned, there is an imperative there to try to cause infighting amongst the Iranian leadership. So that has to be taken into account anytime you hear something from Axios or any of these media agencies that masquerade as meta media, like Axios, Politico. They try to distance themselves from either side of the political spectrum. But ultimately, what's said on Politico and Axios is the uniparty perspective at the end of the day. Now, getting right into the news, we have the advisor to Iran's Ghalibaf. This is basically one of the most hawkish voices inside Iran, or at least he claims to be. He's still alive. He's the head of parliament. It's either him or Khamenei's son who is in charge, or Araghchi, the foreign minister. Nobody really knows who's exactly in charge. And I think this is strategic on the part of the Iranians, because they're sick of getting decapitated. So they just realized it's better to just remain silent while having a bunch of figures speaking on behalf of the government. There is, of course, a rift between the IRGC and the political class. The political class has always been subordinate to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. But at the same time, we don't know the degree to that fracturing, and whether or not there is any at all, or whether that's just an attempt by Western media in order to sow discord. Now, he has said that Trump has about 20 hours to either surrender to Iran or his allies will be returned to the Stone Age, and that we will not back down. I'm going to talk in detail about what's going to happen inside Iran if they do take the most extreme approach and destroy the entire power grid, something that even the Russians have refrained from doing in Ukraine for the last 4 years. And that's important to know, that the fact that we're having this conversation at all is incredibly depraved, especially when you pride yourself on having the biggest, bestest, baddest military in the world. Well, then go and fight a ground invasion against the militants, the combatants that you claim to be against. Don't penalize the entirety of a 90 million strong civilian population that is heavily urbanized, or you will see millions of deaths. If Trump makes good on his maximalist threats that he's going to wipe out the power grid, all the bridges, all the oil and gas industry, I'm telling you, that's going to be a humanitarian apocalyptic nightmare that is going to have serious blowback around the world. And you're not going to be able to sit that one out. A lot of people think, oh, it's going to be, you know, entertaining, right? I think there's a lot of people who are vicariously consuming this information, and it's entertaining to them to watch these tragedies unfold. But that's going to affect you. It's going to affect you in the sense that all of that money is going to be basically diverted from things that would improve the American experience and quality of life to these senseless wars. But I digress. The Pentagon has canceled a press conference tomorrow that was scheduled and has conveyed its response to the U.S. Iran has conveyed its response to the U.S. via Pakistan. And now this could be bad news. It could be good news in terms of no more escalation of the conflict. But it seems as though the interests of the Israeli side, and perhaps to a slightly lesser extent the American side, are implacable. It seems like nothing that Iran will ever do short of full-blown dislodging of the current government that exists there will appease the war hawks in Washington and Tel Aviv. So for that reason, it really does look pretty bad. And I'm 70% leaning towards shit's going to go down. But important thing to remember is, even if Trump decides not to attack the power grid and take down the entirety of the power grid, that doesn't mean that he's not going to do a ground invasion. In fact, this whole thing could just be a bit of a head fake, a sales tactic of sorts, a door in the face sales tactic, as they call it, where you make this just preposterous, abhorrent offer to somebody, and then you make a lesser offer, which will be more acceptable to the population. Trump could come out tomorrow and in saying something like, well, we've decided that for humanitarian reasons, we're not going to take down the power grid. We're just going to do a ground invasion, right? That would appear more magnanimous when, of course, he's just moved the goalpost. So this is something that they could potentially be working on here, but nobody really knows, because one thing I will say for Trump is he is the master of ambiguity and just throwing out every possibility. And right now, Axios is firing on all cylinders. They're pumping out information saying that, well, we understand that the Iranians are being very hawkish in their response and that they're being somewhat intransigent, but that's just we understand also that is a bargaining tactic, and that won't preclude negotiations from moving forward. So we're getting all kinds of mixed messaging. We really won't know, but it looks like we're inexorably hurtling towards some kind of ground invasion. And what we've seen the other day, where it seemed like for most of the consensus, I think amongst the experts, like the real experts who are not on the payroll, seemed to think that this was some kind of trial run or an attempt to try to do a much bigger mission than just extract a pilot. Because when you know how many pieces of equipment, aircraft, combatants, hundreds of commandos that were involved in this operation, all for one pilot? I don't think so. I don't think I'm buying that anymore. They say no man left behind. Meanwhile, let's not go on that rant once again, because you guys know where I stand on that. They're leaving millions of people behind in America right now, okay? And you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. So Tehran has rejected a temporary ceasefire and is demanding a permanent settlement on its own terms. They're being incredibly maximalist. They've also demanded that they want an end to regional fighting, sanctions relief, reconstruction report, which is a fancy way of saying reparations. They want safe transit rules in the strait. They're going to be charging a fee for people to pass through the strait, something to the tune of 1 to 2 million per ship, and they're going to split that with Oman, who also shares part of the waterway there. And there's a few other stipulations that they have, but again, none of this is entirely known. This is just what we're getting. The actual counterproposal could be much more hawkish. It still could be comprised of the demand that the U.S. move all its military bases outside of the Middle East. And that really is the only way to establish any sort of security guarantees. The only way you get security guarantees with Israel or the United States is through an intermediary who has nuclear weapons, who can extend their nuclear umbrella to the Iranians. Without that, it's never going to work. Here is what Professor Mirandi, who is quickly becoming the spokesperson for the IRGC, whether he likes it or not. He has said the following: evacuate the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, and Qatar immediately. The Islamic Republic of Iran will destroy all critical infrastructure of these regimes as the Epstein Coalition targets the critical infrastructure of the Iranian people. Now, it's interesting that he did not add Israel to that list. And I can only surmise that that could be because they have more formidable air defense and their multi-layered air defense and Jordan and all of the other international support in defense of their territories is far greater. And there's a lot less soft targets. Israel is a smaller place, so they can more easily defend. So if Iran can do far more damage with 10 missiles on the Gulf states, which are bigger countries, they're more spread out and it's harder to use the limited air defense they have, especially effectively, because of course CENTCOM really does operate out of Israel for the most part. And for that reason, they have the best operators of these air defense systems. This is why Trump is blaming the Gulf states for not knowing how to use the air defense systems today. So I want to talk about Iran's power grid, okay? And again, the fact that we're having this conversation at all is extremely depraved. You had the Russians attack the Ukrainians for 4 years. They've barely hit the major government buildings in Kiev. They've barely touched the power grid. They've hit the odd thermal plant. Usually that is limited in scope and it's for operational purposes. There's an actual objective there. And usually these are ancillary for military purposes. And that's the only reason. They're not blacking out the entirety of Kiev. In fact, Putin even refrained from destroying the Ukrainian power grid, I believe it was just prior to winter, at Trump's request, because of the humanitarian crisis that could await. And so I suspect that, you know, I can't see, because if Trump actually goes through with this, understand, if he's serious about destroying the power grid, which he very well may be, I mean, we've seen them blow up bridges that serve very little military purpose. You could argue that anything could enhance a military's capabilities in society. You could say a school, you know, because it's a place they could hide, or they could indoctrinate children into their ideology or the religious belief system. I mean, you could just, you know, keep playing a semantic game with that knows no bounds. So this whole idea that, you know, everything can be weaponized for military purposes, well, you could just make that argument and then you could gaslight everybody and say, well, it's, you know, they're using it to harbor or aid and abet the combatants, and therefore, you know, it's a valid target. But understand what's going on with Iran, okay? So we're talking about a nation of 90 million people, 80% are urbanized. And as preppers, we all know what happens if the lights go out for an indefinite period of time. If many of you have read 1 Second After, it's a story about an EMP, electromagnetic pulse. The power grows down. It's irreparable damage. Can't be fixed for years and years because there's world war going on. What that means is basically, I think it's a bit of an overstatement, but 90% of people could potentially perish. And it's not because of the immediacy of the effect. It is due to the long-term effects, the inability to grow food, the inability to have functioning hospitals, the inability to do logistics, to move things from one place to another, to pump water. Iran has 130 major power plants, which I don't doubt, because it's such a large landmass, that the U.S. could probably destroy, okay? They have 400 smaller plants that could probably easily be taken out. The transformers could easily be taken out. If you take the U.S. and Israel on their word that they've hit 13,000 targets, there's no reason why they can't hit 500 more and black out the entire Iranian population. These are very fragile power grids, just like anywhere in the world. And Iran is already in a demand shortfall. In summer, they reach 76 gigawatts of demand, and this is largely due to air conditioning because it gets very hot in Iran, much like the rest of the Middle East, which will be blacked out as well. While the grid reportedly meets only about 78% of the demand, so we're in a shortfall there already. Iran relies on natural gas for about 85% of its electricity generation. So really, if they wanted to, they would just take out the natural gas plants, and that effectively shuts down Iran's grid and their ability to export that via pipelines or by liquefaction. This creates major pressure in winter when heating demand spikes. Okay, the IRGC has secured backup power through diesel generators and adjacent small plants. Now, they did target a facility where Iran makes the majority of their gasoline and diesel. I'm sure that Iran has enough diesel stockpiled to last years and years in their bunkers. So this is the whole thing. This type of a broad spectrum, indiscriminate approach is only going to enhance the IRGC, because we've seen what happened with Hamas. And this is what happens in these types of situations. When you do wholesale indiscriminate damage and everybody suffers equally, well, the people who are centralized, the people who have analog comms, the people who are networked and run society, they only have more advantages in that situation, not less. We've seen that with Hamas when you had those hordes of these crowds of hungry people who are fighting for food in these trucks, and somehow Hamas was able to hold it all together because not only did they have the guns, but they were more resourceful and they could weaponize that. They could use that as leverage. You get food if you do X, Y, and Z. So this is something very important to consider. And because the IRGC has that backup power, this is not really going to affect them at all. This is going to affect the civilian population. They think that in this chaos, that there is going to be this insurrection, which can be controlled and steered towards U.S. and Israeli interests. That's never going to happen. This is going to be Syria 2.0 on a much, much bigger scale. Okay. Iran is also far less dependent on desalination than the Gulf states. So power outages would not create the same immediate water crisis there. However, despite this asymmetrical advantage they have, because indeed 5% versus like 90% in some places, they also require pumping. They require water to be pumped, and that requires electricity. There's about 1 million wells in Iran, many of which are considered illegal, which is why they're having such a major water crisis there. And that means that the first thing that's going to happen is that whether they get their desalination plants struck or not, if they don't have power to bring the water not only out of the ground, but then pump it to people's homes, then that's going to be a massive crisis, a massive apocalyptic crisis. This is the desert, a lot of it, not all of it. In the north, you know, it's a bit greener, but by and large, this is a very hot desert. And if you're destroying a nation's power grid who depends on that power grid in order to pump water, bring water up from the ground, and it takes a lot of energy to pump water. Okay, it's no easy task. I have a heat pump in my house, and it's an incredible, I mean, that's a little bit different, but still, just to run a well, it does take electricity, and I have a well too, and that takes power as well. So you're talking about 80% of the population is urbanized. Where are they going to go? They're going to go the countryside where there's no shelter, where there's no water. Okay, they're not. They're going to have to leave the country. They're going to go north through Azerbaijan. They're going to go west. And that's just a pit stop along the way to Europe or elsewhere. They might have to go to Russia. They might have to go to Turkmenistan or Afghanistan or somewhere else. And this is just going to create a massive, massive refugee crisis if he doesn't. Which, as crazy as he is, I still don't think he's that crazy to do it. Because understand, this is apocalyptic for the global economy. The Iranians have said that they will hold the Gulf regions hostage, that they will retaliate proportionally if that happens. And that means they've already started. They hit Saudi Arabia, one of the Saudi Aramco cities today. And there is a massive fire that is currently burning. And I would show you it if I had my screen today, but I don't. So you're talking about no fuel, because how are you going to pump gas if there's no, how are you going to make gas, first of all, because they destroyed one of the biggest refineries, their petrochemical facilities, one of the the cheap staples of the Iranian economy is cheap gasoline. That's no more. So you're going to have no fuel, no diesel, no food. How are you going to grow crops? Iran is, while they do import a lot of crops, compared to all of the other countries in the region, they are more self-sufficient. But how are you going to grow crops? How are you going to pump water? How are you going to ship it, do logistics, distribute to all of the various grocery stores, get it to where people need it, package it, all this stuff? You're not going to be able to do that. No AC, no hospitals. Hospitals have a very limited supply of backup power. Anybody who is dependent on those life support systems, they're not going to make it, okay? There's going to be no way to regulate the flow of natural gas. You need electricity to do all this stuff and to coordinate it. There's going to be no internet, no digital payment system. And while they might be a little bit more reliant on cash there, I don't really know what the situation is there as far as that goes. But I would presume that just like the rest of the world, the developed world, that they are more dependent on digital payment systems. And if people don't have a way to transact because the grid goes down, then that's not going to be good. That's going to be a whole other level of crisis that is going to be involved here. And again, as I said, when you have a situation where the standard of living has been greatly diminished as a result of what will be tantamount to a war crime, you are going to have the people who are in those centralized, organized network positions who have analog means of communicating, which are not contingent on the grid. Their power differential is only going to widen between the population as a whole, and it's going to be harder to deal with them after that. How are people going to organize in the dark, you know, besides, you know, pitchforks and riots, which of course will just beget more violence? And it's not going to be, and it's something that can be weaponized in the opposite direction, because of course you can say, well, we'll provide you with the limited amounts of resources that are available if you back us up. What is known with respect to, let's go into some of the war stuff now. So the Iranian missile hit rates against Israel have reportedly risen from 3% in the first 2 weeks of the war to 27% today. So they've increased by nearly 9 times in terms of accuracy. That's pretty substantial. Okay, now I think a lot of it's because they're using these cluster munitions, but there might be something more to it. They're using cruise missiles. They're using these hypersonic missiles, which are precision-guided missiles, and they have late-stage maneuvers and things like that, as opposed to just their old-school ballistic missile stuff. Now, the NASA firms the fire information for resource management. It basically shows you the heat signatures that are emanating from various parts of the globe. And they've determined that this is a very serious incident that has unfolded in Saudi Arabia in Jubail, which is a industrial city. Okay, it spans 1,000 square kilometers with more than 150 industrial facilities, accounting for 7% to 12% of Saudi GDP, just in this one place, and about 50% of total foreign direct investment. It processes between 500,000 to 700,000 barrels per day and hosts major steel, aluminum, fertilizer, and chemical plants. It was smoked hard. This was a massive fire, and it looked like cluster munitions fell on this place. And if you guys know about that, it's like a shotgun missile. Okay, it disperses 80 submunitions, sometimes more, across a area. And because the Iranians are now bringing these things in, so when it splits into the submunitions, it is now happening at a lower level, so the attack is becoming more concentrated. So just like if you shoot a shotgun, the further away you are, the more spread there is. Well, now it's the spread is narrowing, so it's doing more concentrated damage on a lot of these facilities. And so this was a big one. This was a very big one, and I think what they're trying to do here is throw the first punch in what they know could potentially be a bad situation, and maybe they're trying to encourage the Saudis to try to encourage the Americans to back off. Because I think, you know, there's all this rumor about the Gulf states who are, you know, tacitly supporting the Americans and encouraging them to continue to try to take Iran out of the fight, thinking that they can avoid being destroyed in the process. And if Iran doesn't establish deterrence, that may well be true. Again, we could see another attempt of doing a landed invasion. I think that if you're going to threaten the civilian population, you should at least man up, do a ground operation, or don't do anything at all. Okay, I would prefer a ground operation over the most abhorrent use of force on a civilian population, probably in history, because we're far more dependent on technology now than ever. And if we're doing something that the Russians haven't done in 4 years, then that says a lot, right, about who the good guys and bad guys are. It really does. And everybody's saying that now. That's now within the zeitgeist of ideas. That's within the Overton window. People are saying we're not the good guys. And, you know, when you have a nation which is built on the principles of freedom and sovereignty, and you're going around entangled in all these interventionist pursuits, well, it's quite contradictory. I don't have to beat that dead horse. In the Strait of Hormuz today, two Qatari LNG tankers. There was a lot of hope that they would be allowed passage through the Strait of Hormuz. And you're hearing these stories now about how ships are being allowed passage through. A lot of this is cargo, so it's not oil or gas. Two Qatari LNG tankers were reportedly attempted to transit Hormuz, were presenting themselves as Pakistani and Chinese vessels, and they were interdicted. They were forced to turn around because the IRGC said, no, you're going to be on fire if you don't go back. Now, Qatar is one of these countries that's kind of on the fence. They have a lot of Iranian assets, and I think they have some unwritten agreement with the Qataris, but it's not quite that ironclad of an agreement just yet. The Panama Canal, this may have been an act of terrorism. We don't know yet. These things, I don't think they just happen like this, especially when we're seeing it happen throughout the United States. A large fuel tank explosion below the Bridge of the Americas at the Panama Canal exploded. I don't think the bridge had damage, which was structural, but this was a massive explosion, and it was a fuel tank, which was oddly stored right near the bridge, which seems dumb. And so it could have been more disastrous. And if it would take out the Panama Canal, I mean, think about what's going on here. This is an energy war. It's a war for corridors. I would not be surprised if something happened in the Suez at this point and the Bab el Mandeb, and they could just shut down all the corridors, and that would bring global trade to a halt at this point in time. Even if Trump comes out tomorrow and says, you know what, I'm not going to blow up the civilian, they're still going to keep the war going. And that's what people need to realize. I mean, he has set the bar so, I don't want to say high, so low that, you know, the markets might think it's bullish that he's not going to blow up the civilian, but he's not going to open the Strait of Hormuz with that. And they're not going to get a deal, not on these terms anyways, because there's still a lot of daylight between. So it doesn't look good. Germany, and I want to remind people of this, because this is very important when you know what's going on in the Baltics right now, where the Russian Foreign Ministry just made a threat to the Baltic states that we know you're using we're allowing your airspace to be used by Ukrainian drones, which is why we are getting our oil and gas infrastructure targeted in greater frequency and intensity in the last 2 weeks. Well, they basically threatened the Baltics and said there's going to be a response soon, Article 5 or not. And so we're going to see if they back down. There's absolute panic in Europe as Bild is confirming that Germany is preparing to ban fighting-age men from leaving the country for the next 3 months as they edge toward compulsory military service. France is also launching a form of national service, and Western governments are quietly preparing their citizens for good old World War III, just like I've been telling you. When they see, and you see those guys getting scooped up in Ukraine, that's a trial run, folks. You think it won't happen here? You see, ICE was just priming you to get used to seeing somebody tackled by guys in paramilitary gear and stuffed into a car. And you ain't going to know the difference. Is he illegal or is he getting conscripted? You ain't going to know the difference, and most people ain't going to put up a fight. And that's what they're doing, and that's why they're militarizing the military bases. They know what is coming down the road. They're getting ready for the protests. They're getting ready for conscription and to mobilize the Selective Service. It's all going to happen. It is definitely all going to happen. You think they're going to be able to put 1 million boots on the ground without a military draft? You think they're not going to be able to do it? Of course they're going to be able to do it. They've been able to do it all throughout human history. Nothing has changed fundamentally about our psychology. You think we're more evolved now? You have Trump standing next to a guy in an Easter bunny suit threatening to destroy a nation of 90 million people. I mean, it's just farcical at this point. So in Hungary, apparently, or was it Serbia? One of those two, a pipeline was attempted to be sabotaged. And apparently they're searching for people. They might have even arrested somebody. But this is where you get these nations who are kind of on the fence. Serbia, Hungary, who are they going to side with? Are they going to remain neutral in all this? I guess we're going to find out. There was a massive internet outage in Russia once again today. Pretty much every app, if you will, was taken offline, okay, for an extended period of time. And I just want to read this to you. This is from Maria Zakharova, a Russian foreign ministry spokesperson, and this is directed towards the Baltic states, because this is the story that nobody's paying attention to right now, but you should, and then I'm going to cut this video. According to information at our disposal, the Baltic states have decided to open their airspace for the free operation of Ukrainian unmanned aerial vehicles, which are being used to carry out strikes on civilian and military targets located within the territory of the Russian Federation. Understand something about the Russians. If they are calling attention to this, it is serious. If they wanted to diminish this in terms of its significance and not cause a public panic, they wouldn't say anything at all. They would just eat the L. The fact that they're calling attention to it means it's happening, okay? And you could say, well, it's a lot of the NAFO guys are coming out and saying, oh, it's Russian propaganda. Clearly, they're skirting Belarus and the Russian Western border. But If she's coming out and talking about, if she hadn't come out and talked about it, I'd say, okay, it's 50-50. If the foreign ministry in Russia is coming out and saying shit's happening, you know shit's happening. Because what this means, now that they've acknowledged that shit's happening, if it keeps happening and they don't do anything about it, then of course they look like pushovers, and that's bad for their own domestic population. But it is also potentially permitting their adversaries, who are the Baltics and Europe and the United States to a lesser extent, or perhaps more of extent, depending on which geopolitical analyst you listen to, are only going to continue to push the envelope. There we go. Turn the lights on here. My studio lights. This is yet another confirmation that Vilnius, Riga, and Tallinn are becoming increasingly, those are the capitals of the Baltic states, are becoming increasingly involved in the terrorist activities of the Kiev regime. They are not only supplying weapons, but are also directly becoming participants in aggressive actions directed against Russia. They should understand that such steps will not go unanswered. In this regard, Moscow has issued a special warning to the Baltic states. Our position is clear and unequivocal. They have been warned. If they fail to understand, they will face consequences. Russia reserves the right to use all necessary measures to ensure its security, and full responsibility for any potential consequences will rest with the authorities of these countries, which are turning their territory and airspace into a staging ground for foreign criminal plans. Signed, Russian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova. All right, I'm going to leave it there. Let me just see the time of making this video, if there's been any positive developments on the negotiation front. If there hasn't been, if he does it tomorrow, the first thing you need to do, if he does it, when you get the word that the Iran has been blocked out, you need, I mean, you should have did this weeks, months, years ago, as we've been talking about it, you need to do a grocery run. You need to buy whatever you think you're going to need this year to grow a garden. You need to stock up. If he actually does it, it's game over. It's game over. Let's see here. I'm not seeing any positive news. just more widespread explosions in Iran. Just more escalation. But anything can happen. Again, but don't be fooled also. If Trump comes out and says, oh, we're not going to do it, that doesn't mean it's time to rest on your laurels. Like I said, their interests are implacable. They're not going to stop just because. And the goal will be to turn Iran into Syria by hook or by crook. And that's very unfortunate. And unless China sheds a little bit of blood, that's how it's going to be. Unless somebody steps up and says, look, you attack Iran again, we're going to nuke you. That's the only way that we reassert a global balance, if there's that countervailing force. Because if there isn't, then this thing, you know, gets really, really ugly and out of hand, far more than we're already baked in. It's already going to be a rough, shitty summer for the better part of the planet. But maybe we can start seeing the light of day in fall if things wrap up sooner than later. But it really doesn't look like it. We're not seeing many positive signals. Right when Trump came to the podium today with Pete Hegseth and Kane, I could just tell by the body language that it wasn't good. And I would probably give it like a 10% chance that they're not in the very least going to do a ground invasion. And, you know, so... Yeah. Let's hope for the best. Prepare for the worst.